So, joining me now on the stage is the wonderful Sarah Parmenter. Hello.
I love the way you say my name. I know I tell you that every time.
What? Why do I say it wrong?
Because you give me like an Italian lilt. You make me
Parmenter. I was saying Dorset.
Parmenter. It's like
Parmenter.
I like it.
Yeah. Is that good? How do you say it then?
Parmenter.
Parmenter. Like you've kind of trodden in something nasty.
Yes.
Parmenter.
Yeah.
Parmenter.
Yeah, you say it with an Italian.
Yeah.
Sort of. I love it.
Well, I think it suits you more.
It makes me feel continental.
Okay, so we're going to talk about stuff. Can you tell I've got no idea what we're about to talk about? Also, the other thing that I've done horribly wrong is I put my phone in my pocket, which means if people text through stuff, like when I've run out of time, I won't know, so I need to get that out. Okay. So, you now seem to spend a lot of your time talking about iOS design. That's the thing that you've become known for. Does that mean you have abandoned the web?
No, not at all. I do pretty much 50-50 split with web UI and iOS design. But what I found more is actually that clients tend to come to me for iOS stuff, but actually with a view to it extending into the other devices that are available. So they just tend to use iOS as the first springboard, because they've got analytics to show that it's the one that's the most used by their customers or whatever. But they tend to use that as a springboard for the other platforms now.
Okay. So do you have clients that come to you and say, we know we need to do this mobile thing. What should we do? And if so, how do you advise them whether they should have a responsive site, a native app, a hybrid app, a pixie fairy app, or whatever?
The old Jeremy Keith caveat applies of it depends. And most of the time, it depends on budget, to be honest. A lot of the time, it comes down to native stuff is just by nature a lot more expensive to produce because of the platform, the coding language, etc. iOS developers, there's not many of them, and they're charging a heck of a lot at the moment.
They're ripping you off, really, from my experience.
Ripping you off, value for money. The native stuff, it's a really hard one to call because you can do so much good stuff hybrid now.
Yeah.
And native is locking someone into something. And with all the other devices now, like there's older stuff that apps just don't, some of the apps don't work on some of the older devices now.
Yeah.
So we're having like an IE6 problem, but with native apps in some ways.
Oh, joy.
Yeah. So I think I love some of the native stuff that happens. I love loads of native apps that are on my iPhone itself, but the actual use case for going native with a lot of things, for most clients, it's easier to use some of the other formats that are available to actually get on the platform. So much of the time it comes down to budget.
Okay, fair enough.
And then other times there's certain things that you just can't do with the web.
Yeah.
Game stuff, for example, but there's many other things that you would just say, look, you don't need an app for this. This can sit nicely on mobile and still work beautifully. So,
which do you prefer designing?
I prefer designing for native apps purely because I like the constraints. I like the fact that I know the viewport size. I know how to design with Retina in mind. I feel comfortable, but that's not necessarily a good thing. It means that you can kind of rattle through it and do it in your sleep almost. But I prefer the comfortableness of designing for native, but I like the challenge of doing responsive as well. So.
Okay, so when you talk about you like doing native design and you can kind of rattle through it, I presume that's because there are certain, not rules, but certain best practice that you've developed.
Yeah.
What kind of things? Talk us through a little bit about, you know, your tips for iOS design.
Oh my
for
goodness.
This isn't on the list of questions, so I've put her on the spot now.
Yeah, you have.
Yeah.
Well, I think
they better be good, Sarah.
Oh, thanks, Paul.
People have paid a lot of money to be here.
Good.
You've got to be good.
I love you too.
That's all right.
The thing with native is it's got its own pattern library, and you come to just learn the pattern library, really, because there's so few you see the same things coming up again and again. You see the old, I've learnt this week, it's called a hamburger menu. The three-line menu.
It's a hamburger
apparently
menu.
It's called a hamburger
see,
menu.
There you go, that's paid. Just that one comment that has paid for your fee, isn't it?
It's called a hamburger menu, apparently.
Yeah.
When I say I prefer rattling through it, it makes me sound like my clients now
it
aren't
getting.
It
sounds like you don't care, is what it makes it sound
like.
There's
like. No. Yeah. It's just when you know something inside out so well, you feel like you can tell clients with a certain amount of confidence about the platforms and what can't be done, for example. So as far as tips go, it's just about knowing the pixel sizes for most things. It's about knowing minimum hit targets. It's about knowing that if you've got two buttons next door to one another, have you left enough of a space between the two to take into account if there's any mistaps that are going to happen? Could you tap one and actually get the other? You need to know about the pixel sizes between stuff. And the kind of magic number on iOS is always 44. Everything seems to fall at 44.
Right.
So all the bottom bars are sit at 44, the top bars sit at 44. Most buttons are 44 by 44, the tables are 44, everything sort of sits around or double that for retina display, so.
You're making it, you can take this the wrong way, you're making this sound quite boring.
Thank you.
No, what I mean by that, Sarah, is there seems to be so many constraints. You know, I was just comparing what you're talking about to the way that Mike was talking earlier.
Yeah.
Don't you find that everything ends up coming out feeling a bit the same? Or should it come out feeling the same?
No, I don't find it does come out looking the same, but I like the constraints. After having worked with an infinite canvas of the web, I love that because I'm still doing sort of 50% of that side of things. I still get to sort of go free on the creative side with that. But when it comes to designing for that one platform, I do like the constraints.
And I guess also the satisfaction when you've got all of those things that are set, the satisfaction comes in the tiny things.
Yeah.
You know, and the beauty of some, for example, iOS icons are just pieces of artwork in themselves, aren't they?
Yeah, it means that you can really add intricate kind of design details, especially because you know that they're not sat very far from people's faces. So it means that gradients that you apply can be much, much more subtle than it would be on the web, for example, mm-hmm. because of the distance that you see it at. So I wouldn't say it's boring. I love it, but the problem is then taking something that's been designed for iOS and then putting it across multiple platforms, because you'd be stupid to think that what you're doing is going to be locked into that one platform and just do it for that one platform. So that's an interesting evolution, kind of in the same way that we're going with responsive. You have to think of that in a similar way with native stuff.
Right.
But, yeah.
What about, there was an interesting piece of research done on UX Matters. I don't know whether you saw it, about how different people hold devices. Did you see that
one?
No,
I didn't, but I've read some things on
really,
it.
Really, really good article and about all the different, they basically observed 1,000 people plus using devices and the different kind of combinations. Do you have to put a lot of thought into that in terms of where you position stuff?
Yeah, comfortably people will use the bottom section for navigating, which was one of the main reasons why I moved my new site design to navigate from the bottom.
Right.
Because most people, if you think about the way you hold your phone, you're actually using one finger to hold it, and you're using your thumb most of the time to navigate. So it only gives you a kind of half semicircle, or if you're left-handed, either way. So. Yeah, it does definitely have to be taken into account, but that's the kind of thing that I love designing for.
Yeah, so. But that creates some quite interesting problems when it comes to responsive design, doesn't it? Because if you're taking a website where maybe the navigation normally sits at the top, you know, because it's a desktop website and that's the convention, when you bring it down to a responsive device, do you want the navigation at the bottom there? You know, and how do you deal with those kinds of things?
Yeah, that's an interesting one, because I actually swapped my main navigation on the desktop to be at the bottom as well. And it's been an interesting, it's like a Marmite kind of response that I've had from it.
Well, I'm sure Jeremy will tell us what the right thing is to do. He always knows. Okay, let's move on from iOS design.
Okay.
To something else. When I saw this written down, right, because I was given a list of topics that you might want to cover, and I saw the phrase, the glorification of busy, And I immediately thought, right, that's going to take a couple of hours to discuss. I can get into this subject. Before I rant about why what this is, do you want to explain what you mean by this?
Yeah, and I was guilty of it at dinner with Mike. Where's Mike? There. I did it and then thought, oh, shit.
Now you've got to stand up in front of
everybody. I've now got to stand up and say I hate when people do that. But actually, it kind of backs up my point. I think it's become more of a... not a standard answer, Mike. I'm not saying that.
Basically, she wasn't listening to
No, me. I think it's become a habit that when we talk to one another, we say, oh, how are you? Are you busy? Yeah, I'm really busy. You? Yeah, I'm really busy. Yeah. Good. And it's become this thing of, like, if you actually say, well, no, I'm not, people go, oh.
Yeah.
Oh, are you okay? Is everything... yeah, no, I'm fine. I'm just not running myself ragged.
Yeah.
And... I think it all stems back to a personal thing that happened was that I really regret was when my mum died last October. When I said to my dad, why didn't my mum come round more during the day? Why didn't she come round for a cup of tea or something? And he said, she always thought you were busy.
Yeah.
And that, since then, I've kind of looked at the way I'm perceived by my friends and family. Am I perceived in a way that would make them think that I'm so busy that they can't call me for help, that they can't pop round? Am I that busy? How much time have I spent on Facebook today? How many times have I checked Twitter? How many times has my phone interrupted me with ridiculous notifications and dropped me out of what I was doing? Could I not spare 15 minutes for that friend?
Yeah.
Can I not go and take someone up the road because it will help them? Am I that busy? And I think that we have this thing where we sit in front of our computers and we go, right, 8 hours work, go. But we're not actually logging what we're doing during that time.
No.
And if you actually take account of how many times you've checked a news website or something that you go back to on a regular basis, you probably do that quite a lot. You probably are only working really 3-4 hours a day at most. What are you doing for that other time? And I think... It goes back to some of the books there are about the subject, you know, the 4-hour work week or something like that. I think sometimes we have to take stock that we're not a normal industry. Freelancers aren't normal.
People.
Freelancers don't work normal hours, but we have this thing in our heads that for those 8 hours, we have to be sat at a desk and we have to be seen to be working, when in actual fact, I don't think many of us realise the effects that that's actually having on our friends and family.
I mean, the reason this is such a pet subject for me is because I also don't think we realise the effect it has on us,
uh-uh.
Our attitude towards work. I'm going to blame Silicon Valley for this, that there is this kind of work to live, or, you know, live to work mentality.
Yeah.
Where, you know, I regularly do a 70-hour week, or, you know, and we become kind of obsessed with, it's like a badge of honour that I did it, pulled an all-nighter or whatever else. And it scares me because I think, you know, we're quite a young industry, a lot of us are quite young, so we're maybe at the point where we're single. This obviously doesn't apply to me, who is incredibly old, but... you know, that people are single, they've got time, so, and it's their hobby as well, they like playing around with computers, so they do these ridiculously long hours, and then that becomes the industry standard, that becomes what is expected of us. And, you know, we burn out, burn out, and we do neglect friends and family, and our life changes, and we have kids, but we still think we should be pulling those 70-hour weeks. So, yeah, I mean, I totally agree. I think it's something that we need to talk about more as a industry, really.
Yeah. Our industry.
There wasn't a question.
No, sorry, I just left
you hanging, basically.
No, there was something like.
Say something interesting about it.
No, when you were just talking, there was something I was just thinking.
Oh, I've now thrown you.
No, you've thrown me.
No, it's gone. But it's interesting. I think.
Oh, no, I've thought of it.
Go.
Sorry.
Go.
It's just come back to me.
It'd be more interesting what I was going to say.
Oh, no, now it's gone again.
Now it's gone again.
No, you should. No, you need to stop talking.
I'll shut up.
Hang on.
Right, we're all going to sit and quiet. Shh.
Oh no, this is what happens
tick,
when I've had half a glass of wine.
Tick, tock, tick.
No, don't do that.
Okay.
Hang on, because it was a valid point.
Is it going to be good? We could just presume it was really good.
Yeah, just presume.
Wow, that was a brilliant point, Sarah. Thank you. I think that alone has paid for the... So, no, I think it is a really interesting subject. And I do worry that we've got to go for it.
Pricing. That was what I was coming back to, sorry.
Right.
No, it was about the fact that we all love our jobs so much that we're not pricing correctly. So we're doing loads of hours, and because we enjoy what we do, we're actually not billing the correct amount for what we're doing.
Yeah, like so, Mike spending 2 weeks on a homepage that he's not being paid for, probably.
No, but that's the problem, is we love our jobs so much.
Yeah.
That we're actually, when it comes to pricing stuff, like responsive design, which takes so much longer to do, because we love our jobs, we're like, oh, well, I just sort of tinkered with it for 2 weeks, and oh, look, it now works.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be that way, because actually it's a chargeable service.
Yeah, absolutely.
And because we love what we do, we don't think of, I always try and think of a family member. Everyone in this room will have a family member who struggles to even turn a computer on or something of that sort. If you think of that person and you're saying to them, well, we just need to make this website, they would freak out at what you were doing. It's because we enjoy our job so much that we don't take into account the learning curve that we've gone through to get there.
And of course, we exist within a community where we spend all our time coming along to things like this, hanging out with one another, so we think it's perfectly normal to be able to whip up a website in our spare time in the evening. Which, and that's not normal behaviour, people.
No.
Go and have a life.
Although I do remember doing that once.
Yeah, well,
during the entire Eurovision Song Contest.
Well, there are worse ways to spend the Eurovision.
No, that was one of my first
watching
websites.
It for a start.
It was one of my first ever websites that I was doing, and it was one of those when tiny, tiny pixel fonts were in. It was like 1998 or something.
Yes. Yeah.
And I remember coding during the Eurovision Song Contest and using these tiny fonts and thinking I was so cool.
Yeah.
Because I was using this Geocities tiny font for telling everyone about my dog.
Robin would give you a slap.
I know. He's not here.
Right. But it's interesting. I think as a community, we are a community, aren't we? As web people, and we share a lot, and we interact a lot, and we need to be talking about stuff beyond just this is the latest jQuery library, isn't it interesting? That's my normal voice. I put on this voice especially for the stage. But we need to talk about these other things. We need to talk about how we interact with one another. And another of the kind of more sensitive issues that we discuss whether we should talk about this or not.
Yes.
And which is sexism within our industry as well.
Yes.
And I do want to bring it up, because I think most of the conversations about this seems to have happened on Twitter, which is not the best way to communicate anything, really,
no,
is it?
No, 140 characters.
So you've been, you've had some serious issues. You've received a lot of criticism for daring to be a woman and for daring to be talented and attractive. That is a bad combination, girl, and you need to stop it. Because you are making the rest of us feel old, inadequate and incompetent. So, I can in some ways understand the criticism. No, I can't, obviously. What has been your experience of that? What are the lessons that have come out of it? What do we need to do as a community to fix this problem? There was a lot of questions
I was going to say, roll back. Question. Well,
let's do number one. What? Talk about your experiences and what's happened to you first.
I've had...
Or more generally, if you prefer.
I don't mind. To be honest, a lot of it has happened a while ago, so I've made my peace with it. I'm not suddenly going to crumble on stage or anything embarrassing. But the first major thing happened with you, didn't it?
Yes,
not,
it did.
Not you. It was
you. I've learned my lesson today.
No,
was that the first major one?
That was the first.
Really sorry.
No. It's fine. It was fine. But that was the first major one. Was on the
200th
Boat World podcast. Chat room thing was going on in the background.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bizarre situation. We do an audio podcast. But on that particular time, we had video going.
Yeah.
And there were people in the chat rooms criticising you, really, for your appearance.
Yes, and wanting to do all sorts of nasty things.
Yes. Which is like, where does that kind of stuff come from?
It wouldn't have been so bad had I not sent an email to my clients being really like, I think you'd really enjoy this podcast.
Oh, no.
If you want to join in, it's happening between such and such and such and such a time. And then afterwards I got these comments like, Sarah, there was some interesting people in that chat room, and I'm really sorry. I never have the chat room on really when I'm doing podcasts
or anything,
because you're just seeing
much. Yeah.
So I was kind of unaware of it. And at the time, it was a really big deal, because at the time, I hadn't had fake porn pictures uploaded of me to the internet. So you kind of weigh up.
There are levels.
There are levels of stuff. At the time, though, I remember it was a big deal. And I remember you did a video afterwards saying you were so pissed off about it. You were really, really cross. And that was a good thing for you to do that video, because it really addressed it right there and then. And the sad thing was that it was clearly people within our industry as well, because of the nature of the show and stuff. And I think that was the most disappointing thing, was that it did actually stem back to our industry, which I just find that a bit sad, because I thought we were better than that. And then you did the video and that addressed that, and that was fine. And then last year, while I was doing an event apart out in the States, which for anyone who's ever been to it, it's a really well organised conference. It's very, very, everyone's at tables and have got laptops. It's not a standard, you just sit there and listen kind of conference. And about 10, 15 minutes before I was due to speak, so Jeffrey Zeldman speaks, and I normally have the slot after him. And Jeffrey was probably the one person who I felt most comfortable with to go up and tell what was happening, but couldn't because he was on the stage.
Yeah.
So I sort of came to the conclusion that I wasn't going to say what happened, which was this guy had started to try and flood the conference feed. They have a feed apart that pulls in from Twitter. He tried to start flooding the feed with these fake porn pictures. Now, not fake as in my head on someone else, just really, really good lookalike pictures. And they weren't me, before anyone's sitting there going, he tried to flood them just about 10 minutes before I got up to speak. And they blocked the initial set. And I remember saying to my friend Christina, do you think I should kind of bother them with this? Because I don't... Well, no, because it's a funny situation, because I was thinking, Jeffrey's up there speaking right now. I don't really want to give them any reason to make them worried about me, because they've brought me over and it costs them a heck of a lot of money to bring over the English speakers as well. Yeah. So you're very aware that you want to do your best for them. I don't want to then have them thinking she's not going to now perform to her best because of this happening. So I was kind of ready to just go, I'll just see what happens and deal with it. And then I mentioned it to Christina and she went, you need to tell someone, because it's not fair on the attendees if these pictures get out and all hell's going to break loose. So we have about a 10-minute changeover after each talk, and Jeffrey and the event organizer Toby pulled me aside, and Jeffrey just said, I'm going to stamp it out. I'm just going to do a blanket. We're not going to stand for trolls on the feed. We get trolls. Just if you see anything, ignore it. If you see anything derogatory about our speakers, ignore it, blah, blah, blah. But while I was up speaking, he actually tried to put stuff through via Facebook, started at replying other people who were at the conference. It got interesting, but thankfully the attendees were unaware of anything.
So the big question is...
Yeah.
I don't want to spend... We need to move on from this because there's other things to cope. But how do we deal with this?
Well, I think that is an isolated incident. I think if someone's going to do that to someone, they're going to do it. And that's just a really bad flip side of putting yourself out there to speak. I don't think it would happen to every person. And I don't think... I think if it happened now, it would have less impact, because we as an industry are aware of such things happening.
Yeah.
And maybe some people would be more inclined to speak up about it because it would be seen as less embarrassing, I guess. But as an industry, and guys, I'm looking at you, we're really bad at being inclusive of women, not in this situation, not right now, but afterwards.
What,
in
like
the parties, in
time?
The coffee breaks, in the tea breaks, anything like that, it's very noticeable.
That's because we're all terrified of you.
It's not. Do you know what?
I'm joking.
I spoke to a young lady in the break who was on her own, who sat next to Jeremy over here, and no one else was talking to her. And I went over and saw her on her own, and I do that. I feel like the guardian angel of women who goes, right, who's on their own? Who can I go over and speak to? Because I don't want that person, if it's their first experience of a conference, I don't want them to think of us as an unfriendly industry.
Yeah,
I feel like it falls on my shoulders to go over and be like, how are you having a good time, and try and be inclusive.
To be honest, that applies Blokes as well. If
yeah, yeah,
you know, if
yeah.
you see a guy standing around feeling like Billy No Mates, you go and speak to him. You know, it's politeness. Yeah, but I think because we're all vaguely on the autistic spectrum, I think we need to be told this kind of stuff sometimes. Anyway, enough of that.
Enough of the down stuff.
Yeah, I did want to talk about it because it is important.
No, it is important.
But what I'm also very interested in, how that you seem to have this endless plethora of little side projects on the go, right? So you've got, you know, you've got Homeless Project, you've got Happy Mondays podcast, you've got Unlock Magazine. How and why? You know, how do you find the time for all of this? And what drives you to want to do all of these? I mean, is your running your own business not enough?
I have an assistant now.
Oh, that's exciting.
Personal assistant. So she takes all of the kind of admin side of things off of me.
Oh, cool.
Which is really nice. And it gives her an in into the industry. She's really young, so she's learning HTML and CSS alongside me as well. But the homeless stuff was close to my heart because I'm terrible at giving out money to homeless people. The Unlock magazine, there wasn't anything that satisfied me for what I wanted.
Yeah.
And then I started asking the question of other people who were into iOS design and development and general mobile design. And the magazines that seem to be out there at the moment are more of an app review rather than this is how we made this.
Yes, very different.
So that's what that is. And the third one, Happy Monday.
Yeah.
It's half an hour on a Friday.
Producing podcasts is a lot more work than half an hour on a Friday. Hours it takes me, all the editing we do and...
Really?
None at all.
Say,
there is
it's
no
half
editing.
An hour on a Friday.
I but I tell you what, sorry, that came out really loud. What? What does come out of that, I love your work ethic. I love, you know, you've talked earlier on about not the glorification of busy and all of that. You talked about you've got an assistant. You've done the number of times I sit with people and they go, I hate managing projects, I hate doing my finances. Well, why do them then?
Yeah.
Why not hire someone to do the stuff that you hate so you can do the stuff you like? And you seem to really take that kind of approach.
Yeah, I have in the last, only because I noticed my own standards slipping a lot. I noticed that I was getting a lot of emails saying, I emailed you about such and such last week and have you seen it yet? Or someone tweeting me saying, I emailed you last week and I'm just chasing. And I was thinking, oh, I'm getting a lot of these now. And I must be slipping backwards, and I don't like that feeling of sort of never being caught up.
Yeah.
And although I still don't feel caught up, I'm a lot further forward because I've got Catherine. So.
And so Catherine is basically like an intern stroke admin person, but she's learning as well as she goes along.
Yeah, she was going to come to me under the apprenticeship scheme, but there were some legalities with that didn't work out in favour of the employer. So we changed it up. And they also wanted to do modules for her. And one of the modules that I read was how to send an email. And at that point, I went, yeah, we're not going to do that. Yeah, we're gonna do our own thing.
Right.
And I'm going to teach you, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, she's been great.
So would you reckon, I mean, there's a lot of freelancers sitting in the room. Would you recommend this kind of approach?
I would, but to a certain extent, I was discussing this, I think it was at New Adventures, we were saying that having an apprentice when you're a one is a really, really hard thing to do.
Right.
Because you're managing essentially another person's workload, when actually you've got your own processes and workflow and you can just sit down and work. You've actually got to think, what's she doing today?
Yeah.
Is there anything for her to do? What should she be learning if there isn't anything for her to do because she hasn't got a certain thing from me in order to continue her work?
Yes.
So I do find that aspect of it really hard, but thankfully she's quite intuitive with stuff and she'll find stuff to do when she's got a good work ethic. I think it's about finding the right people.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So is this like a permanent thing? Or
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, she's permanent. The View, she came on last May and she's been with me since. And the View is that this May she'll be skilled enough to come on board. She is sort of a junior web developer at the moment.
Okay, brilliant.
She's got enough skills where she can get through stuff with minor changes from me at the end of it and not asking too many questions. So, yeah, she's doing really well.
That sounds really cool.
Yeah, she's a good egg, that one.
She
emailed me every day for 8 weeks.
Really? Trying to get you to work?
And I finally went, oh, come and do work experience then.
See, that shows a lot, doesn't it?
It does,
that kind
yeah.
of perseverance says
yeah.
a lot. Well, on that bombshell of amazingness, I think we'll wrap it up.
I have just one thing to say.
Oh, Sarah's got one
no,
more
just,
thing
just
say.
Because
Jeremy, I'm sorry, we're going to cut
sorry,
into your time.
Sorry, no, it's worth it. But just because the sponsor message from them was so humble from Go Squared, I use Go Squared and it's amazing. And I thought that them just coming on the stage going, this is our app.
And it's cool,
it's really
it?
Cool, but it's a really, really good system. I use it.
There we go. Product endorsement. Round of applause for Sarah.
Thank you.